You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, behavior plans. How do I get my kid to stop doing that? I am your host, Dr. Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. And today, we again have a special guest, our friend and colleague, Dr. Jake Napick. Hey, Jake.
Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Jake is the director of training here at Renewed Freedom Center and a pediatric psychologist. So we're going to talk about behavior plans today. First of all, why don't you just tell us, Jake, what is a behavior plan?
So I conceptualize a behavior plan as a preventative measure, right? This is not a reactive measure. This is something that you're doing in preparation to address a behavior your child might be experiencing, right? And it's a behavior that, as a family, based on your values, you have deemed is not in line with that, right? So if that's hitting or kicking or screaming or swearing, or is a plan that is put in place to reduce the amount of times that behavior occurs.
So why would a parent need a plan for that? Can't they just shoot from the hip and kind of go with their gut?
No, I tend to be a gunslinger as well. And what happens with that, and why I try my best to advocate not to do that, is that will breed inconsistent parenting and also inconsistent results of addressing that behavior. Because if it's not structured, kids don't really know if it's going to come or it might come, or we don't know what's going to happen. And parents also are reducing the power that their voice has by, you know, if your kid hits and you decide that time, like, I'm too busy to deal with it. Well, now the kid knows, oh, good. Well, mom's busy. Now I get to do this. This is perfect. What a fantastic opportunity. So it's important that it's planned and it's agreed upon so that every time that happens, child knows that the response will be a certain way and it'll be implemented. And it's fully on the up and up.
And I can imagine how confusing it might be for a little kiddo who has one response to one behavior and a different response to the same behavior, and it's not consistent.
By doing that, by not having a structured way of dealing with these undesired behaviors, what we're doing is we're reinforcing that the world's response is inconsistent. Okay, we're reinforcing this idea that I get away with it sometimes, I don't some other times. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get real sneaky with what I'm doing, and I'm going to really try to get away with it in certain ways.
Again, that reminds me of getting traffic tickets, right? You see the speed limit is 65, yet I'm going to go 70, 75, and maybe I'll get caught, maybe I won't.
We take that risk because maybe the reward outweighs it, right? We get to go a little bit faster, we get to enjoy the speed, we get to get somewhere a little bit quicker. If you're in anywhere outside of Los Angeles, that is. Not speeding doesn't really occur for us. So, but it's the same thing with parenting, specifically around these behaviors that have been deemed as undesirable, where we do not tolerate them based on our system and our family.
So let's pick an example of a behavior that you see in a lot of your kids, and what type of plan you would use for a parent.
When I'm conceptualizing behavior plans for parents, the first thing I ask myself is, how capable is this parent? Okay, now that's not, I'm sure a lot of my parents, and if anyone's listening, you are smart and you are able. What I mean by that is, do you have the time to implement this?
How realistic is it to follow through on this?
Do you have a support system in place, or is it just you? My behavior plan for a single parent is going to be different from a dual parent, right? Versus a nanny and a driver and all these other people too, right? If it depends so much on the system that is in place that is there to support the child and the parents that are trying to do it, right? So a behavior plan for a three-year-old or a two-year-old to stop hitting and kicking is going to be very different than a behavior plan for a 10 or 11-year-old to stop hitting or kicking. One of the biggest things is, you know, with 10 or 11, parents sometimes think that they can rationalize with these kids now. They have the ability to talk and communicate. So I'm going to do that to them, right? Where two-year-olds, we might not do that as much. So it all depends on the age and the ability to implement these.
Let's talk about that, this idea of trying to reason with your kids. A lot of parents will come in and they will try to talk to their kids and ask them why they did it and sit them down and impart lessons. And that doesn't always really work very well, does it?
I would go on the ledge and say it almost never works in the moment, because what parents are doing is it's a reactive moment, right? There's something that just occurred that was intense, that has caused a lot of emotions. So then instead of responding with a consequence or a corrective behavior, we're going to talk about it. We're going to try to rationalize it. We're going to try to process why you did something like that, right? The reality is that it doesn't matter why. If you responded in a way that was inappropriate, the behavior still occurred and that needs to be corrected, right? So even if you get to the why, what are you going to do with that information, right? Why? Well, my sister, you know, she hit me first. Okay,
Sounds like you're opening a can of worms. Yeah.
Now you're a detective and you're a mom and you're a behaviorist all in one. And it's at the end of the day, even if there is a valid reason, like even in the back of your head, you're like, she kind of deserved it, right? he deserved it. You still have to engage in correcting that behavior. So it's important to make sure that the first line of offense, the first line that you do is engage with the child in a way that is correcting the behavior. And once everything is calmed and the dust has settled and you as part of your family, it's part of your, again, your value system to process things and to, that's an okay time to do it then, right? And you can learn from that experience and you can move on from that. But in that moment, trying to rationalize with an irrational 10-year-old, it's like wrangling cats. I don't know. Good luck. It's going to be very unsuccessful.
Perhaps a more realistic way to look at this is the punishment has to fit the crime. However, after the corrective behavior is, or the corrective response is applied, then it would be important to process what happened with the child so that the child understands why was I, you know.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's what, going back to Noah's question in the beginning, is that's why if it's all transparent, you don't really even have to have that much of a conversation because it's already been done. Because we don't hit in this family because we think that using our body as a way to get our needs met is a ineffective way of communicating, okay? So that's the reason why you're doing this plan, right? It's already been talked about in a very neutral and effective way, right? So when a kid steps out of line and hits or kicks or throws or whatever, we've already set in place why we're doing this.
So let's take hitting or kicking. What would be a good consequence in a behavior plan for such a behavior?
I always like to go to the difference between active and passive punishment, okay? Or corrective behavior, if we don't want to use the P word.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of parents have turns them off to hear the word punishment.
Ooh, punishment. So, Amity's word.
Although we're punished all the time as adults, right?
Nonstop.
We're punished.
Yeah, nonstop.
We get parking tickets. We get speeding tickets. We get late fees. We get all sorts of fines.
Interest payments on student loans, just for example. I don't know. Just coming off the top of my head. Right? So again, it's I'm going to use the word punished, but that's my choice. So passive versus active punishment. And a lot of times what we'll do is parents will kind of come with, like, all right, we'll use TV as an example. Okay. So you hit your sister, you're going to lose TV for a day. Okay. All right. So what do you think that kid's going to do? Well, let's say they don't have access to any other technology. TV is their one kind of vice right now. It's the one thing they really enjoy. Well, what you've done is you kind of created a prison mentality where it's going to be like, I've lost TV for a day. I got
now
nothing
I don't
else
know what to do with myself.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to entertain myself by harassing my sister, and I'm going to toe that line between, you know, another punishment, and I'm going to be that annoying, and I'm going to push the buttons.
Start
of everybody
drawing on the walls.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be real, or I'm going to go and I'm going to like sneak mom's phone, but then like hide it real quick so she didn't see it. Or
you're creating a monster.
Well, just a creative way of getting your needs met. Anyways, so that is what I would call a passive punishment. That child doesn't really have to do anything to earn that TV back, right? Just kind of get to hang out, wait time, annoy people, and then I get it back. So not only are
Sounds like an easy punishment.
Yeah, why not, right? So we
It's like serving time in prison.
Exactly. We just kind of sit here and we become better criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And so passive punishment does a similar effect, right? Not to the extreme maybe, but it's teaching kids that I don't actually have to change my behavior. I just have to wait. So I always encourage an active punishment. What I mean by that is it's 24 hours without TV. And if you engage in any of the other undesired behaviors on time, during that time, we will go ahead and reactivate that 24 hours. So now you have to do 24 hours of sitting and reflecting with the inability to engage in those other behaviors.
Which isn't even possible for a 10-year-old.
Well, again, so for some 10-year-olds, we might have to do 10 hours, right? It's all going to be relative to the ability of the family and the child. However, it's important to make whatever punishment you decide is in line with your value system active, right? Make it so that that the child has lost a privilege and has to earn that privilege back based on
Something nice for your sister because you hit her.
Right. And I think that's another thing you can add into it, right? Listen, I have two older sisters, and there was the rule in my house that I was never allowed to hit my sisters unless they hit me first. So when they would piss me off, which they did, what do you think I would do?
You would instigate them to hit you first.
I would toe the line, and then that was it. right? My mom was pretty quick and caught on to that little scheme I had very quickly. So then it became to no hitting no matter what. But anyways, mm-hmm. so the important piece is, yes, if it's going to be something nice for your sister, that has to be part of the active punishment. So we're going to lose TV. You have to kind of engage with your sister in an appropriate way, and you have to solve this issue that caused this hitting or kicking to begin with in the first place. And then if we agree with everything and everything's done, you've regained access to something that is a privilege.
And you're saying here, one thing you would not do is sit them down beforehand and ask them, why did they hit? Why did they do this? Don't engage them in any of that.
No, because what you're doing is you're kind of...
It sounds like if you're asking why, then you're also condoning that there yes. might be a reason why hitting is okay.
You what you do is you crack the window. You kind of crack the window as an option for escape. Mm-hmm. And what kids will do, especially really, you know, clever ones, they will see that and they'll go directly into, maybe they'll start crying and they made fun of me first and they called me this or they did that. And they kind of pull on their parents' heart, you know, tug at the heartstrings. And then maybe, just maybe, they'll get out from their punishment, right? Or their parents will feel bad that after 2 hours, they'll kind of invite them into their bedroom and be like, you can watch TV with us. So no, do not talk.
Okay, so let's take another behavior that we hear a lot is kids saying, no, I hate, or maybe I hate you, or maybe they'll swear, or using language that parents don't like or approve of. How do you deal with that?
I would say that when I work with a family and they have a child that's engaging some undesired behaviors, we kind of list out tolerable versus intolerable.
Yes.
And parents will, maybe in your experience as well, but it's really hard for them to put language intolerable to begin with. It hurts a lot, right? Language.
Yeah, but it hurts you.
I understand. Yeah, I get that, right? It hurts us. And so when it comes to language, parents tend to be a little bit more reactive than if it was hitting or kicking. Mm-hmm. Because it's this whole idea that we don't talk like that. How did they learn that? That's not part of who we are. And here they are saying that. And you want to jump in and you want to say, what is wrong with you? Where do you learn these words? What are you saying this for? We would never say that to you. And parents overthink how to handle this. Whereas in reality, aggression is aggression. And if it's aggressive behavior, we will handle it in a very similar way that we would handle physical aggression.
And it's natural for kids to have aggression, even little toddlers, as I'm now learning.
Yeah.
As they go into their terrible twos.
Get ready for things thrown at you, right?
Oh, they've been thrown at me.
I'm sure, right? And so you have to be prepared as a parent to tolerate the discomfort of a child who you sacrifice for and you give all of these amazing things to, with them not really knowing all that goes into it, calling you all sorts of names, depending on the intensity it goes to. And so what I mean by that is it's the same thing as the physical. Don't engage with it. We don't ask why you're doing that. What's wrong? Let's talk. We go right into it. Whatever the punishment, whatever the reaction has been developed for the behavior plan, you go right into it. There's no real difference. And I think it could be a little bit more challenging because other people might react, but within your home, that's something that you can monitor and you can engage with and you can modify.
Let's distinguish what is negative yet tolerable behavior versus negative and intolerable behavior. And tolerable behaviors mean behaviors that are negative, yet you have to be able to ignore those behaviors rather than respond, because responding is attention. It can reinforce those behaviors.
Exactly, because I've gotten you now and I'm controlling you and I'm the one deciding what you do or don't do based on what my actions are. And that's what we don't want. And so some examples of negative behaviors that are tolerable, mm-hmm. Especially when you're starting out with this, is anything that doesn't directly impact another human being, right? So dirty dishes in the sink, right? It would be dirty clothes in the bedroom, dirty rooms, dirty desks. We'll get there. But right now, those are tolerable. They're not necessary. And there's creative ways to get around that, right? There's creative ways not to enable that behavior to make it go further without setting up a consequence and direct impact. Mm-hmm. Those are tolerable, right? Those are things that you can engage with in a way that doesn't reinforce them rather than setting up a structure plan right away. So those would be examples that I would traditionally hear from families.
So let's go back to Noah's example. What if a child, let's say a four-year-old, start cursing at their parents, mm-hmm. or start saying things that are very rude and not just obnoxious, however, just rude?
Well, I think I would go back and it would be, what is the plan that's been in place? So if that's a family that comes and say, for whatever reason, this four-year-old is saying,
I hate you.
Yeah. That's what I was going for, right? So if there's anything outside of the traditional four-year-old defiance, which is healthy and that, you know, we're expecting, we would implement a plan that would be basically one opportunity for corrective behavior, right? So it's, you know, you've just said something that's inappropriate, right? Which, and I kind of always use the example of you have two roads, right? Which road are you going to go down right now? For a four-year-old, this might be a little bit too conceptualizing. So for a four-year-old, you might go right to the consequence. But let's say for an eight-year-old, right? You would go down, which road are you going to choose to go down? Which way? Do you want to go down one road that will lead to enjoying the rest of the day and being able to have fun with mom and dad? Or do you want to go down the road that's going to lead to a consequence and you losing some of your privileges? You get to choose. By doing that, in that moment, you've given the opportunity for a corrective behavior, a natural corrective behavior for the child to make a decision, a choice to control which one he or she does. So based on that, it would go down one road is, all right, let's move on, right? So you're ignoring it, you're not reinforcing it, and you're able to teach them that there are other ways to communicate. The other road would be consequence or a punishment that's aimed to reduce that behavior. But it all depends. Some families aren't capable of having that. Some have to go right to a consequence.
Can you explain a little bit how ignoring a behavior works to reduce it?
And this is like my, I would say it's my number one question, right? Ignoring versus active ignoring is pretty different. Right? So ignoring what a lot of parents will do, they'll be like, yeah, I ignore it. I do that. And I'll watch them sometimes and they're white knuckling it and their teeth are clenched and they're muttering under their breath and they're just saying these.
They don't have a poker
face. They are telling, right? They are telling that they have not a very good hand. They're not actively addressing it, but they are passively, right? They're grinning their teeth and they're really frustrated and they're tense and they are upset. Active ignoring it is accepting that it's happening. And making a choice that even on the inside, I use the example for a lot of parents is a duck on the surface of water. For me and you, we look at it, it looks pretty graceful. But underneath, it's churning water like crazy, right? It's feeling discomfort. But what we need when we're actively ignoring a child is that calm demeanor because you are the reflection of the reality of the situation. And the reality of the situation is you don't get to control me. You don't get to manipulate me and you don't get to tell me how I'm going to react. So we're going to actively ignore that. And by doing it, we're teaching the child in effect that they don't have that ability. And that's not a way you're going to get your needs met.
So what if maybe a 10-year-old says to their parent, I hate you. You're a terrible parent. And the parent says, you know, that's really mean. That really hurts my feelings when you say that. How would you rate that as a response?
Well, that's definitely a response. You just gave your child the guns the house.
Well, you gave them the ammo. You gave them everything they want. Is you basically endorsed that, okay, perfect. So now I know what to do to get you all worked up so then I can get my needs met. So I would, again, based on your values, a lot of families do want to talk about their emotions, right? They do want to process why they're doing that. And you can do that, just not in that moment. In that moment, it has to be the reflection that you do not get, this does not work. This is not a tool in your toolbox, so let's just go ahead and get it out.
Well, also the way that I like to explain it is when a child is activated and is being reactive, mm-hmm. their fight or flight response has been triggered. And we know that during a fight or flight alarm, you don't have the ability for rational thinking. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in trying to reason with a child when the child is throwing tantrums, when the child is reacting. The best time is when the storm has passed and now you want to talk about what happened.
Yeah, and I always say it's oil and water, right? The parents that want to rationalize, you can shake that bottle all you want. Your rational statements as an adult will not mix with your child's irrational beliefs because of that. The hindbrain has fully hijacked your ability to reason. You're not going to get through and you're not going to teach your child. That's the whole point of all of this.
One more situation here. A lot of parents will say, my kid doesn't listen to what I say. I tell him to do this and he says no, or he doesn't listen. I tell him to come downstairs and he continues to play. How do you deal with those issues of, I guess we would call it defiance?
Defiance?
I think it depends on the age too.
I'm going to try to speak as broadly as I can for as most age groups is that, and even from a young age, as a parent, my goal is for them to have a voice because what happens so frequently is that they become background noise. Do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this.
That sounds annoying.
It sounds annoying.
I'm annoyed.
You're annoyed. That was my goal, right? And it also, what else is, if I have to say do this 10 times for you to pick up a sock, your voice has no power. You have nothing
backing. It means I can ignore you the first 9 times.
Because what we're doing is it's saying, parents will say, well, they should do this.
Why?
Exactly.
Why should they?
Why?
Because why would I want to pick up my socks?
Well, also because
how
I know either,
fun is that?
Yeah, because I know you're going to do it because you're going to get annoyed, or the nanny's going to do it, or I'll just wait. There's no, I don't care about that sock. You care about it. You pick it up.
Right.
Right. And so that's what happens, is that you, over time, you lose your voice. So then when it comes down to maybe more serious topics, you have no backing.
You've already trained your child to not listen to you.
Exactly. And I always knew growing up, there were two things my father would, most things he was very, very casual with. There were two things that you just did not do. Bad grades, right? Really bad grades. Mm-hmm. And car stuff, right? If you did any of those, I knew there was a consequence. There was no debating it because his voice had power.
Mm-hmm. So if a parent comes in here and they have no voice or have no power with the kid, how do they get it back?
They get it back by starting small. If we're trying to regain that voice of saying, you do this, and then there has to be a follow through, right? We are not starting with a reactive moment like homework time or bedtime or times where you are really, or everyone's on edge, right? Because at the end of the day, or we're tired or reactive. We start with small things and things that we are ready to, when I kind of use the term, we're ready to die on that hill, because you have to be prepared. Once we're trying to regain that voice, the second you say, go pick up your clothes in your room, and the child says, no, you have to be prepared to get them, bring them to their room, sit there until they clean up. And for a lot of families, that's time consuming and challenging and emotional. However, it starts with the little things and it builds on top of that.
And you have to make sure that whatever the consequence is something that you are willing to follow.
100%. And that you're willing to commit to. And I always say, if you're not willing to follow through with that corrective behavior or that punishment, keep your mouth shut.
That's right.
Don't say anything.
Because what will happen?
Your voice becomes even less powerful, or you'll reinforce that, oh, it's 10 times I have to say something, and then finally it happens.
One objection I hear from parents often is that they were about to administer the punishment or the consequence, but then it was a birthday party or some other activity, but then they realize, well, I don't want to disappoint the other parents at the birthday party or their friends or the kids' team, and so they end up going.
Who's more important, your child and you, or the birthday kid and that family?
And I think it's the overemphasis on the disappointment of other people, right? Mm-hmm. It's this, well, he's their best pitcher in baseball, right? Mm-hmm. He can't miss the game. What a great learning opportunity if he missed the game and then he had to explain to his teammates why he missed the game. Not you calling him out sick and saying he has a stomach ache. No, he didn't listen to his parents and he's actually at home cleaning his bedroom, so he can't come pitch. Talk about a consequence.
That's a big consequence.
Use the things you have. I get all parents say, we don't have any carrots. We have nothing. There's tons of things out there. You just have to be willing to accept some of that discomfort as well. So that's my biggest takeaway too, is that extracurriculars are extracurriculars for a reason, and they're privileges. They are not rights. And so you can use those as ways of, listen, if you don't get this done.
And you know, I just want to reinforce that applying consequences is difficult.
Yes.
Because you're attached to your child's emotional reaction and your child's disappointments and so forth. So whatever the consequences, first of all, it has to be effective, it has to be powerful, and it has to be something that you consistently follow through on.
And I think the effective piece, and it's using your resources, right? Be creative with what it is, right? If I would get a letter home for being a smartass in class, right, which I happen to get sometimes, I knew after one time that the consequence of that letter came home was that my mom would make me write an apology letter that I would have to read in front of the class for being a distraction. Do you know how that terrified? I was done. I'm just going to sit in the back of the class and just be okay, right?
Because your mom used shame.
but it was appropriate social.
Yes, it is.
It was like, I would rather not get that feedback from my friends of being that funny, cool kid than do that other thing because that was really impactful.
And shame is a powerful tool that parents do have, even with little toddlers as young as two.
Last thing, a lot of parents will come in, they'll say, yeah, we're on board with all this behavior planning, but can we start it in like a couple of months because we're really busy with work right now, we don't really have the time, or maybe we can start it in next summer or something. How do you respond to that?
I mean,
it really depends on how destructive this behavior is. How dangerous is this behavior? Is this a behavior behavior that you feel like you can live with for another 3 months? If so, then it's not on your priority list and you can wait as long as you want until you're bothered enough by it that you want to do something about it. Yeah. However, if you don't feel you have the time and resources to follow through on a behavioral plan, then do not implement it.
Yeah, you're better off just status quo or just ignoring rather than trying to do a behavior plan and then not implementing it appropriately, because that's the biggest concern. Because then we just have reinforced that cycle that, oh, mom and dad, they don't have the voice that they think they do.
I also want to add in that a behavioral plan doesn't have to be this convoluted process. It can be something as simple as, if you throw your food on the floor, then you're going to get off the high chair and you won't have the rest of your food. It can be as simple as that.
And this does not have to be point systems and charts and all of the, again, sometimes behaviorists and we get really excited about tracking behaviors and doing all of this. And it doesn't have to be that. It can be really straightforward as long as it's upfront and transparent. You're good to go.
And transparency is the most important thing, because I know there are parents who don't discuss it with their children, and then all of a sudden they're applying a consequence and the child had no idea that this was going to happen, and that is not fair.
Okay. Thank you both very much. This is one of my favorite topics that we go on for a very, very long time. Jake, thank you so much for joining us, and you too, Dr. Yip.
Thank you, Noah.
Thanks for having me, Jake. Thank you.
That's all the time we have today. You've been listening to the Stressless Life podcast. Send questions, comments, or episode ideas to thestresslesslife@dryip.com. Check out our website at www.dryip.com/podcast. If you like what you've been hearing, please write us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Until next time, stay stressless.